It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Mont Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Welcome to listeners in the Fairbanks and the surrounding area. It's a great time of year to live in interior Alaska. Winter has finally loosened its grip and the snow has begun melting. My name is Randy Zarnke. I'm the host of a program we call Alaska Tracks. We listen to excerpts from interviews I recorded with veteran outdoorsmen from around the state. Their stories are both entertaining and educational. Today's featured guest is Daniel Carman of Nome. Daniel is a respected Native elder. He approached the interview by relating the annual cycle of various activities to gather food and other resources. Let's get started with the first part of Daniel's interview.
My name is Daniel, and Eskimo name is Kakaksinoluk. I'm named after my late uncle, who was a dog teamer way back in the 30s or even in the 20s, when he had gone outside to demonstrate the dog mushing activities in Olympia, Washington. And my father and grandmother originally migrated from Siberia about early 1900s. And my papa-to-be married my mother-to-be in Deering. It's a little community between Nome and Kotzebue. The spring season is when a lot of our Inupiaq people always making preparations for hunting on the ice first for the seals that stay on top of the ice when the sun comes out. And we used the seals to make seal pokes, because back in the late 20s and 30s, there was no containers like we have today, like the buckets that are in abundance. They used the seals when we hunt them on top of the ice to make seal pokes. They'll take the meat out and the blubber off the seal and dry the skin inside out for about a week. And that'll be our containers for the coming summer season. Always some activity to make preparations for those events that take place, because we will always need containers like the seal poke to store our berries, our food sources like the marine mammals off the ocean in the springtime, or walrus that we find floating, we'll take those too. You can hunt seals on top of the ice as long as the winds aren't blowing from the east. Because when the wind blows from the east, you could hear for a great long distance. And certainly the seals will hear that too. So we'll go out when the winds are opposite the east wind and do our hunting. You can get pretty close to a seal just crawling with good sealskin pants on, sealskin mukluks. But always try to have a little barrier that will hide you as you crawl on the ice. You don't do it in a rush, you do it making sure that the seal doesn't hear you. And we'll catch our seals that way.
And how close would you get?
Oh, I'd say we'd get from the end of that bedroom in there. Or sometimes close if you have a good barrier, hides you good.
So 20 or 25 yards?
Yeah. Calibers, them days, used to be 25-35 rifle and a 30-30 rifle. Never used anything bigger than that. We've had 30-06s, but that's mainly for the bigger animal that we hunt. So after the seal hunting event takes place, the men that go out hunting will bring them home, and then the mothers will start cutting up the seal skin so that they can dry. They'll cut it thin and dry it up. They'll use the skin to make mukluk strings. It's much thinner, not like the weathered seal skin, which is much thicker. So we'll always use different types of skins to complete your mukluks. And that seal skin rope that we make, and we'll use it on our seal hook. We'll turn it on and try to catch that seal that we shot way out. Then they use the sealskin twine. In making sleds, you'll use that thin stuff to tie up stanchions on your sled. You can practically use it for anything you want. In the spring, that's a good season where the sun comes out and stays out, you know, for a long time. time during the day. And for about a month we have a sun that does not set. And that's when we dry up a lot of the things that are needed. Then after the seal hunting, we come to a time, end of May, when the geese, the crane, and all the birds start migrating northwest. They'll migrate in areas where they nest every year, and then some will go on to Siberia. So springtime, before the ice breaks, we'll go with the dog team down to several locations where there's a lot of lakes that are thawing out. And then the birds will always land there, browse around to have their feed from the grass. And those are the things that we hunt every spring. Them days, it was unfortunate we had a law that differed with our seasons for hunting birds. Finally, the government changed it where we weren't lawbreakers. We have underground storage. A lot of the people in the community will dig underground in different locations, use them every year to keep your products frozen. We'll get an abundance of birds, other different types of food that we hunt in the springtime to last us, you know, the winter.
How large would these underground storage areas be?
We'll have one dug about from the wall to here.
10 by 6?
Yeah, somewhere around there, even smaller sometimes, depending on how much hunting a family does. After the duck hunting, the ice breaks up normally around end of May. When it does that, the bearded seal, they vary in size. They weigh about 1,000 pounds. That's where we get the blubber for seal oil. We'll do that hunting on the ice floes out in the ocean. Any boat that goes out will always have a crew of four. Mainly we try to get them from on top the ice. But when we have to shoot it and spear it in the water, we do that. We'll have 2-3 up there in the front, and we'll get the boat motor down to idle and just go right close as we can get. Mm-hmm. And we've always gotten 2, 3, 4, sometimes depending on the number that's on top the ice. And when the sun is shining, that's when they're really out and staying on top the ice. But never on top the ice when it's raining. You got to select your days to hunt out in the ocean and make sure the weather's good. Upon catching our bearded seal, we'll split open the belly and take all the innards off. They're pretty near half a mile long. I've taken pictures of those one time just to see how long they are. And it's a delicacy. We clean that out in the ocean, put water in it and just clean it out so we could have the women folks make it a part of the food that we eat in the wintertime. Different locations on the coastal area do it probably a little differently than we do, never the same. After cleaning out the innards, we'll dip that bearded seal back into water, tie it up and just wash it up where the blood will not bad on us in case we're caught in the storm out in the ocean. Always making those preparations, you know, to make sure the food won't spoil on us, especially the meat and the blubber. Then I remember when my papa brought us out camping to go out and hunt the bearded seal, the crowbills would come, the seagulls, and they'd nest on the bluff. We had an older brother that always brought some fresh crowbill eggs down to the camp where we were staying. He would climb a rocky bluff and someone would watch the rope on top and he'd use the rope to go down to get eggs. He'd fill his shirt front and back, and when it's full he'll tug the line, let the guy know to watch the line a bit with a big long peg underground, you know, making sure he can come up back safely. Then, of course, them days they'd get eggs from the geese, crane, or whatever, when they're near enough to them, or they'd go out with the boats to the rivers where the birds nest and get some from there too. They'd freeze them for winter use. Then we'll head home when we get a boatload of bearded seal. You can get about half a dozen and just go back to the village. We'll divide the catch. The person that has the boat and the motor we'll get one extra. And again, I say it differs in different communities. When that's done, we'll bring them to their families, and the women folks take over the task of cutting it up. It's never cut up in every which way you want it. It's got to be a certain way in order to dry it up on a cache. We'll cut it from the tail portion all the way to above the shoulder, and one big piece will weigh about 200 pounds, and we'll hang it up. And they'll cut it up differently for getting it real thin, or they'll cut it where it'll become blocks where you can cook a certain portion. That's the process that they use. It's a great task the women folks do in trying to dry it up. Then the shanks or the legs, they'll just hang that, and a lot of people will call it the ham. They'll just dry it up whole from the just the arm portion and the leg, cut it up and dry it up that way. And it's delicious. It's a delicacy for a lot of our people. Then when the meat is hung up and drying up, they'll spread out the blubber in the skin and let the sun dry the top, so you can have a good grasp when you're cutting the blubber. If not, then it's real slippery. It's a lot of work, but they do it. Any elder man that hunts with us will teach us, and the elder lady teach the ladies a proper way to do it, so it can be edible during the winter. This is mainly for our winter food. Before the modern times, the Inupiaq people had the use of the skin. They'll cut the blubber off, the entire thing after it dries up, and then they'll make little holes all the way around the edge, so they can have some sticks, and they put it on a little pole that's long as the skin, and then cut holes on the side where it'll dry up. It spread out, dried up, you can hit it once in a while with a stick, and you could hear it's drying up good. And that's for our mukluk bottoms, whether it be winter mukluks or spring mukluks, or they'll use it for their skin boats, or they'll make rope out of it. The bearded seal, it's being much tougher, they'll make thicker things where they'll tow heavier things. Like a walrus, if they find one, they'll use that, making sure that it'll not break on you when you tow it.
As you can tell, Daniel is a gentleman in the truest sense of that term. He provided for his family by being a hard worker. Now let's take a short break to hear from our sponsors. Thanks to our sponsors who make this show possible. Now let's return to our interview with Daniel Carman of Nome as he completes his description of the annual cycle of activities.
Then when the blubber is dried, then we place it in the container and render it out of the way of the sun. Never in direct sunlight. It's got to be in a place where it's cool, in a tent or where there's no direct sunlight, and it will render. That's something we've always wanted to have on hand for winter, for our dry meat that we get out of the bearded seal, or our dry fish, we'll use that. Then sometime back in the elderly times, before modern times, we made use of what we call the hands and the flippers, and then aged them. It's a delicacy for all the Inupiaq people. During the spring breakup, or right after, we'll have what we call the greens that we pick, the sura. In between the marine mammal hunting and fishing, they'll grow on willows, the greens. Then we'll what we call the sweet potato. We call them the musu. It's underground things that we pick every spring and gather the greens. We'll kind of mix them with the greens sometimes, but we like the greens separate when we're having the dry meat off the bearded seal, dry fish. And of course, it's a good diversity during winter, you know. You could have different sources of food with the family, and it's a time of thanking each other for gathering this food. before the ice breaks up too, we used to get wood with dog teams across the bay from our village. And there's always a good time by everyone, having a good time, getting wood, you know, to last during the course of the summer. We never had stove oil or anything like that years before. During the winter, we can get coal from the coal mine, about 50 miles southeast of us. And there was a guy from some foreign countries, he found that. And we'd go up there and get a few sacks for winter, or for summer, too. Big 100-pound sack, he'd sell it for $1. And that was, you know, a good accommodation for us, mixed with the wood that we have. So we'd get wood, everybody with their dogs, they would go across the bay and get some wood for the summer. We don't use that much during the summer because we'll have bonfires outside or one big feast of the catch of the bearded seal. If we found a floating walrus, we'll use the bottom of the walrus, not the top, because where the sun is spoiled already. But it's so big, you could use the bottom and store that. Then the fishing season comes upon us. During the winter, the folks taught us to be making nets. They would teach us how to do it. The store always had twine them days to make either a net or part of a seine. During the winter, and they taught us, making preparation for the spring and summer activities that take place. Then when the ice is breaking, the whitefish and the trout comes. Then we have a seine, and we'll catch them that way, to cut up, dry up. Then the fish that we dry, some of that will be put it in seal oil that renders. It's always an activity you repeat every year, a cycle for your food sources. Or you can dry them. When the salmon season comes, the humpies, we'll dry them. And bear in mind that in the village, there was a lot of dogs. That was the only source of transportation we had years ago, going out hunting, trapping, and reindeer herding. And when we're fishing, like the salmon, when we're cutting it, we'll cut it with the head on. And it's recognizable as for dog feed. But for human consumption, we'll cut the head off of the salmon. With the big numbers of dog teams, we're always having a lot of fish. If we made a big catch on a seine, we'll dig holes where our net is and throw the fish in their hole for dog food. It ages during the course of the summer, and that's what the dogs like, something that has a good, strong odor, I guess. Always caring for the humans and the dogs. They were vital to our needs. And then during the spring, we'd catch a lot of what we call the tom cod. We'll get them through the ice with a hook. We'll make a homemade hook with a lot of line on it and jig for them springtime. The elders, when they're getting old, they like to have what we call the bullhead. We'll catch them through the cracks of the ice in the springtime for them. Always caring for every person in the community, whether they're young or old. Always doing those things, satisfy the elders as well. And after the fishing season is over, the berry season occurs. Normally it's the blueberries that comes first. It's usually around the community where it's not far. We'll pick from that area. Then the salmon berries is the next product that grows. We sometimes have to go greater distances to pick those. Then the blackberries will be about third in the cycle when it gets a little cooler. The blueberries normally around 1st of August, then the salmon berries about middle of August, then the blackberries will be in September. Then the cranberries, just before freeze-up. There's that four groups of berries that we have up here that we pick. Whether it's far, we use boats to go to a different location to pick berries. Okay, comes the fall season. We're always in a cycle, going after rabbits, ptarmigans, when they're starting to fly during fall, we'll get those. And then we'll go up the Imnachuk River to get some fish during the night. We'll use a mantle burner, and we'll use that with a little shade on and look for trout and whitefish in the river and spear them. Always having fun in doing your catch. We're accustomed to a lot of the fish that we catch in the fall. We'll eat it frozen, the whitefish and the trout. And then probably some of the fish that we catch during the summer, depending on the taste of the individual. Then the tonkad comes again in the fall time. That's when we freeze it and we'll eat it with seal oil and blubber. Or we'll use it for our dogs. We'll cook some good foods that we put in a container in the house from our meals. We'll cook some feed for the dog teams that we have and let them have something different on occasion. Towards fall, when the snow comes and freezes up, the men folks go out in the country and do trapping for any types of furs that they can find. Fox, red, white, or cross fox. And then they'll, on occasion, get wolverines and wolves. And that's about five types of furs that they can depend on. Fur prices were good back in the 20s and 30s. I remember going to the trading store with my papa. With one fox, he got a rifle. Wow. It was worth around, over $100. Furs were good prices some days, and made a good living out of it. And that's what they would do, our men folks.
Did you trap with foothold traps?
Yes. Then some of the elderly ladies in the community or young people will go out and set little snares for ptarmigans and rabbits. Learn that process too. And like I said, that's always a good time for our men folks just before Christmas. We'll come home with the furs and buy gifts. Them days, the gifts were mainly homemade. Mukluks, parkies, or they'll make hunting implements. Whatever they made them days, they'll use for Christmas presents.
Rather than everything bought at the store,
right,
like we do now.
Uh-huh. Squirrels were always trapped in the springtime, too. Squirrel skins for jackets and things like that. Them days, there was a lot of respect for families' properties. You never locked your house when you left. Just a piece of stick in there will tell people that were out in the country for a while. But if it's going to be for over a month, then they'll lock it. Back in the 20s and 30s, the family went to the reindeer operation right after New Year's. Them days, there was hardly any thought about keeping your kids in school, you know. They'd pull their kids out of school and go reindeer herding. It'd last 2 months working their reindeer because they earned the meat products, the skin products, the sinew, and leggings that can be used for making mukluks, parkies. And the reindeer handling is to give them an earmark that'll identify the owner of the deer. Or they'll castrate some deer for their next season's butchering for meat. And a lot of skins were always used some days by the Inupiaq people. And that's about the cycle of our life.
Daniel gives the best explanation of a subsistence lifestyle I've ever heard. I hope you agree. If you enjoy listening to Daniel, there will be more next week on another episode of Alaska Tracks.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Orem with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding and Extreme North Trailers, Rod Saw Shop, and Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.